Come along with us this week as we see if an animated movie of Kong, Kong, Kong is wrong, 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 or if all that was needed to make this movie was a little song, song, song. This is Kaiju vs. History. Kong, King of Atlantis.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your saber-toothed tiger riding shaman, Miles, and joining me is a cyberlink dude with attitude, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing this week?
Oh, I'm not good. I barely made it through the intro this week.
I barely made it through mine, and mine was very easy.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we are talking about one of several Kong movies that, and Giant Ape movies in general, that are popping up around 2005 because of Peter Jackson's King Kong. But this one we've already talked about kind of in the form of the Kong animated series on the show.
Yeah. By the time this movie rolls around, how long had it been since Kong animated series had been off the air?
It was 2000 to 2001, I believe. And
so it'd been 4 years, maybe.
Yeah. In some markets, I think maybe internationally was like played later, but in the US it was September 2000 to March 2001. So right around, we were in high school still, and like we said in that episode, I'd never watched this, and I definitely never heard of the animated films. Had you?
So here's the wild thing. I had definitely seen these DVDs like at Walmart, because I used
It feels familiar now that I've seen them.
My buddy and I, especially like in college, would just kind of haunt the Walmart at midnight when movies came out on Tuesdays, or technically Monday, Tuesdays. And we would just kind of like show up when the strip. I don't know why it meant something for us to like get the first copies or whatever. Or because, well, I think part of it was sometimes Walmart would get certain genre movies and stuff, but they'd only get like one or two copies of like the whatever we were looking for. It was not like, oh, they got like a whole thing of them, a whole like row of like eight copies or whatever they have. It would be like one or two copies of this random movie made by a Full Moon Video director, you know, stuff like that. And so we would always just kind of pop up there. And I remember seeing this DVD like collect dust for a long, long time. Yeah. And I never thought in my life that I'd be watching it.
But here we are.
Yeah, but here we are. I guess before we... Is there anything in the title with this one, or is it just Kong King of Atlantis?
Yeah, because this is a physical DVD release. It did release on Warner Home Video DVD in 2005 in multiple languages, and did make it over to... it looks like Brazil had a couple of different titles, including Kong the King of Atlantis, and... I don't know if there were many others. It looked like most of the others were variations of
the actual title
and King Kong. Some places did. I don't know if it's a rights issue, but they never called him King Kong in this animated series. And maybe because it's not the original King Kong, it's a DNA kind of swapped version. But yeah, in various markets, it was known as he was known as King Kong, but not much else. I do kind of. I like this title a lot. I don't know about you, yeah. But
no, it's a good title.
Kong King doesn't roll off the tongue. I messed up our intro because of that. I said King Kong of Atlantis. I was like, wait, that's not right. Kong King of Atlantis. And yeah, this movie provides a little bit of a different backstory for Kong. And it has kind of a weird hollow earth type area where Atlantis is located, and this is 16 years before that concept was introduced into the MonsterVerse in Godzilla versus Kong. But this is a much more bland version of that. Like, you know, it just looks like another part of Earth when they get down there to Atlantis.
Well, yeah, because it's the Skull Island thing, and I mean, basically, and I mean, if you like the Kong animated series, you are more likely to enjoy this movie, except for one glaring, horrible thing about it. There's more, we have an animated Kong musical. Inexplicably yeah. so.
There were no songs in the series at any point, right? I'm not crazy.
Not what I watched.
I don't know why there are three songs in this movie.
And not a single one of them is good.
Including the first one where the main characters of Jason and Lua are like in a disagreement about Kong's
what Kong future. Should do.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where the Kong is. You're wrong. The music has all the kind of subtlety of a, you know, what it is, a children's animated show. It is definitely, I mean, I guess it's kind of on the same scale as the Mighty Kong's music, but that one just felt dated. This just feels kind of like amateurish, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's as bad in some ways. I mean, but it's also not like you can kind of look past it, but ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And which, I mean, yeah, it's the music's bad. I mean,
it just doesn't make sense. Like, I guess they felt they had to do something to like differentiate this because if those songs weren't there, this is really just like three episodes of the animated show kind of slammed together. And
yeah, because
people would have wanted. Yeah. I mean, if you're a fan of the animated series, which my hat's off to you, go live your best life. But like the songs don't feel like they are a part of that. You know, they feel kind of shoehorned. No. In. Like it's what you do for an animated Disney like film. Right. But this is like years after the Disney Renaissance. Like, why are they trying to capitalize? Disney animation has already failed at this point. Right. 2005.
Yeah, they're full into the CGI stuff now.
Yeah.
This would have been, well, no, I guess the same year. Oh, yeah, they had that. Well, was that flop? Home on the Range, I think, had come out and flopped.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to really talk about this one. Because, it just feels like a couple episodes put together for better or for worse. If you like the Kong show, which is fine. It's not a bad show. It's not great, but it's fun. It's more of that. I mean, you have this whole story where there's this, I'm assuming this whole cult of Atlantis that we've never heard of, that the Kong old is
Kong was king of
to.
And yeah, would. So they're looking for a new Kong to kind of rule down there. The movie starts really well. I think it shows Kong having like a nightmare and Atlantis is rising up and destroying New York City. So this Kong climbs the Empire State Building and it looks like an apocalyptic. I think maybe there's like an eclipse happening, which is hilarious because in real life, we just had that eclipse.
Here. Yeah. Yeah. Because the eclipse is an important part of the story.
Yeah.
And I think at one point, Jay's like, well, so what? They happen all the time.
Well, I was like, is this what we're going to see in the movie? But no, this is just like some weird premonition that Kong is having in a dream. I was like, that would have been a great climax for the film. There are so many missed opportunities in this movie, not only from the aspect of making a good independent full-length animated Kong film, but also continuations of the Kong animated series story. I was so surprised that we don't really get like an adversary for Kong. There's an evil vizier, very similar to and there's also an evil queen Reptila in the film. It just doesn't feel like a great villain, you know. There's a few characters of Atlantis that
it feels like they watched The Emperor's New Groove and made like a bad snake version of Yzma, you know.
Yeah, that's
good, but you don't have Eartha Kitt, like, and the voice actress that was voicing the character, it wasn't bad. I mean, everything felt very minor.
Daphne Goldrick plays Queen Reptila.
Like, there is a degree of almost, not ripoff, but, like, there is certainly an element of, like, oh, someone here enjoyed what they saw of Atlantis, Disney's Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
Right. But, that's the crazy thing about it. It doesn't feel like Atlantis. It just feels like a weird Hollow Earth society.
It feels like more, you're right. It doesn't feel like Atlantis. It feels like more island.
And also Isle of Dr. Moreau, because everyone, there's, like, weird half animal creatures.
Creatures,
which is like, I don't know if they give an explanation for it, but I really don't like the firefly people. Like, they're very humanoid, kind of like bug.
They were very odd. They had almost like
get a song in the movie.
I know, but they had a feeling of like, this is something that Don Bluth threw away. Right. You know, because they had that kind of blue kind of design in their faces and stuff, the round features. And
yeah,
it just, yeah, there's so much about this that doesn't come together. And I mean, the story goes where you think it was, because Kong's sick of kind of being bossed around by both Lua and Jason. And these characters kind of come across Kong and convince him that, oh, you're actually a king. You get to make all the choices. And he's kind of going along with it because it sounds good to him.
He gets some cool threads by going down to Atlantis. There's a whole song about it for whatever reason.
Yeah, you have whatever reason, some misunderstandings. You have Kong realizing bad guys are the bad guys, and you know, you have a final battle. Like it's a very uncomplicated story.
The sludge or the living tar that starts pulling animals into
this movie starts up straight up murdering a baby's mom.
Yeah, like, we get to see that live. Almost kills Kong, except for some cool cyberlink action. But I totally thought where we're going was the living tar was going to turn into a sludge kaiju of some sort, because it seemed sentient, you know? It seemed like it was purposely like trying to grab people. I was like, oh man, that's gonna be great when Kong actually has like some kind of villain. But no, he fights Tyrannosaurus, like kaiju sized Tyrannosaurus guards and like armor towards the end, but there's not really in the kaiju fight payoff that I wanted from this movie, because there are all kinds of crazy monsters in the series of they like come animals together to make new things and then cyberlink with them. That's the other thing, and we'll talk about it because there's another movie after this. This only has three returning voice actors playing like their characters. Got Jason Jenkins, voiced by Kirby Morrow, Scott McNeil, who does both Kong and Tannenbaum, and Saffron Henderson as Lua. And I thought that was kind of a miss. Are you ready to get to the rating of this movie?
Not, I mean, again, it's there's not a whole lot to. Yeah. To talk about with this one, I almost wish we kind of had included these in our conversation about, yeah. But since they were separate releases far apart, this, at least this one should have been included.
This one's maybe not so the next one. Similar to the series. I do wish it stood a little bit more independently, but I was also a little sad that we didn't get, you know, De La Porta, like the main villain from the series, coming back, but he comes in the back in the next one.
But yeah, so. I was just like, well, just you wait, baby boy.
Professor Ramon De La Porta.
They feed you in the next one.
And then also Grandma Jenkins comes back in the next one. Yeah, so this movie was mostly made by the same studio that made the series, just to capitalize, just to get a something on the shelf for when Peter Jackson's King Kong came out in theaters. So there's a little bit of crossplay with that. And I guess they just still had the rights to like an animated Kong. So they made this, and then the following year they made Kong Return to the Jungle, which we actually is like four episodes away in the podcast feed. If you're listening to this one, why are you listening to this one? That's the first thing I want to ask you. But yes, if you're listening to this, we have another one coming after this. But yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of the series, this is more of the series, so I think you will enjoy it a little bit more. My personal enjoyment was pretty darn low. I feel the short burst of like a few Kong episodes kind of fit into the format that they were going for a little bit well, as opposed to a theatrical run of a film, even if this was only an hour and eight minutes long. That it felt longer, you know?
It only felt longer because of those stupid songs.
Yeah, it was like, boy, howdy. But I feel like if you had divided this up and this was just a three-part series, like, it would have worked better on the... It would have worked, yes, minus the singing. Would have worked better as part of the show. So, yeah, but I was originally excited when I saw it had a 68-minute runtime. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a breeze to get through. No, it felt closer to 2 hours of a film, and it was lacking a good kaiju. So, yeah, I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. Miles, what about you?
So, yeah, we are back-to-back episodes of 68-minute films feeling a lot longer. This one is because of the songs. I don't think this movie is awful by any stretch. It does feel like, you know, if you didn't have the songs, it would be three episodes put together, and that's fine. I am with you. I thought the tar pits were going to have a much bigger part. I thought we were going to have something similar to like the monster from Fern Gully battling Kong. And I would have loved that. Hire Tim Curry to do it. He would have. And yeah, so I'm in perfect agreement. I'm actually looking at your score. We are completely aligned this week.
Yeah, it's like we talked about the original show was kind of like a 5 out of 10, maybe on a good day, like a 6 out of 10. But yeah, this just doesn't feel as good as the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, if this is all the only thing on or whatever, like I'm not going to hate my life, which I know isn't a rousing endorsement, but it's plenty fine. If you liked the cartoon, you're going to enjoy this for the most part. But yes, there's not a great villain. The story is kind of humdrum, and the songs, I mean, really, this would have been a 6 or 7 had it not been for the songs.
I feel like it is definitely a part that's hurting it, because as we get to the, I'm sorry, what was your final score?
5. Like I said, we are in perfect alignment this week.
I actually liked technically the film. I think the improvement of the animation style in some ways, maybe it was because they had a little bit of more money to make this movie. I don't know, but it looks very good and very fluid compared to some of the animation. And I think it's the same animation companies that they use as well. But there's like some fight sequences and things like that where it actually seems to be an improvement, at least for the human characters. Kong looks fine, but he's just so underutilized in the film. It's a bummer. Songs are not my jam. Songs are not good. They are, I would say, slightly better, but like I said, more amateurish than the songs in Mighty Kong. But yeah, the plot of the film, very bare bones. And like I said, we didn't get a return of Della Porta as an antagonist, which I feel like would have tied this together very well. Can you imagine if he had somehow got a way to like come in league with this Queen Reptila and also like warg inside, like he takes over the tar beast at the end? Just would have worked so much better.
Yeah, but I agree. I mean, and I'm right there with you. Did you say your score?
6 out of 10 for the technical, I feel like is just a slight improvement over the series in some ways, but also why are we singing?
I'm in complete agreement. The morphing sequence is much more, it's honestly, I think, better executed in how it looks. I think they kind of learned that it was a little goofy in the original, and it's still goofy, but they make it look better here. I do think, you know, having Kong go through a similar type of story is not bad. So the script itself is, I mean, for what it is, it's serviceable. The animation is improved. The voice acting is the same. And then, like I said, the songs just weigh this thing down. They're bad. And yeah, there's not a whole lot to say about it. Again, because we've already talked about the show, this is a slightly better looking version of it. What about the evocative nature? I see you have changed your score on me.
I did. I don't think this is like, changed it to a 4 out of 10 for where it needs to be, because I don't think this movie needs to be at all. Like, this could have just been tacked on to the end of the series and worked as well there. That being said, because it is so disconnected from the series, I feel like the people that this should have been connecting with would not have felt a connection. You know, it feels like they're going for new audience with this, with the musical aspect being the biggest question mark for me. But I don't like this one compared to the show. I feel like if you're going to watch one aspect of this series, it might be the series, or it might be the next movie. I'm not sure. I forget what I scored that one. Did you rate it higher? I'm sorry if I threw off the curve.
Well, yeah, you excite me. You always put your scores in before I do.
I changed it on you.
So yeah, I'm sticking with a 5. So I am the kinder of the two this week.
You love this movie, Mike.
It's so funny when you're like, you give a movie a monochrome of like, of a compliment, and people are like, oh yeah, well, Miles loves that. I remember walking out, I'm sure this is a tangent, of the Josh Trank Fantastic Four movie, and someone asked how it was. I was like, it was fine. Didn't hate it. Didn't like that much, but like, didn't hate it.
And then all of a sudden,
so anytime that movie came up, they're like, oh man, Miles loved that movie. Talk to him about it. He'll tell you about it. And I'm like, I borderline said it was fine.
Yeah, that's the thing. I got out of the original Suicide Suicide Squad movie with my wife, and I was like, that was not good, but was not terrible. Also, it's just like right there. That's like a hard five as well. This movie is a very hard five.
Five, I guess, for you.
Yeah, even five.
Oh, actually, I should say actually straight out of five for you. But yeah, I am giving it a five for the importance, because I mean, it just lines up with the show. I mean, yeah, it does the same things that the show did, most of which all that stuff was okay. It's baseline fine, but it doesn't do anything to improve. It doesn't do anything interesting that the show didn't already do already. And that's not to say you can't have animated spinoff films. I mean, even years afterwards, I mean, the Batman franchise had done that a plenty, you know, with Batman Sub-Zero, Return of the Joker, and Batman versus Dracula. So it's not that you can't do it. It's just, if you're going to do it, you got to make sure you have something compelling to do. And we all know, because of the history of Kong movies, yes, this is a blatant cash grab. Someone had, let's just make a sequel to the cartoon and just,
well,
which not, also is confusing because this cartoon has been off the air, was never that popular.
Exactly.
And it's like you put this in the, and all the kids would be like, who are these people?
Well, that, I mean, not just the film, there's also a Game Boy Advance tie-in with this movie. There's a Kong King of Atlantis video game, which there's a playthrough online, and it is like four levels and takes each one's about 15 minutes. So you can crush this game in like a solid hour. And it looks good, like animation wise, for like what this game is. I'm just trying to think back to the Godzilla animated series games, and those were just so bad. But I mean,
the game looks competent.
It's a pretty cheap knockoff kind of platformer beat 'em up game. But you play as Kong, Lua, and Jason in the game, which is kind of cool. Not just Kong running around. But where's my Tan love? Why can't I play as Tanner?
Oh, man, we didn't even talk about Tan. I mean, we don't need to, but like, there's this weird subplot with his character. I was like, is it a romantic thing?
Yeah. There's another Hollow Earth Atlantis version of Lua in a woman down there, and they have to say goodbye at the end. She's like, I gotta live here. I gotta live with my people. And he's like, all right, I'm going back to the surface. That's where cheeseburgers are. See ya.
Yeah,
whatever he said.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So we're both at basically a 5 out of 10. That makes our podcast for now a 5 out of 10 for Kong King of Atlantis. We gave the Mighty Kong a 3 overall from the podcast. Son of Kong back in 1933 got a 5 out of 10. So this is right there. It's just like it's either I feel like a pretty high score for a Kong movie or pretty darn low. And I guess this is right there in the middle. So, but yeah, that's going to do it for us. Where can folks find us if they want to talk Kong, Miles, if they want to Kong it up?
You can't find me anywhere to talk about Kong. No, you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can go to Twitter or X, whatever they're calling it this week, at Kaiju versus History. You can visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. You can join the Cosmic Crit Discord and go to the Kaiju versus History channel and talk to Patrick and I in real time, for the most part. You can rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends, and let us know what you think. Please check out our Letterboxd account to see the reviews of all of our movies and our list of films. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Oh, man. Thank you, Miles. Thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next week when Hot Off, creating one of the most popular fantasy film trilogies of all time, Peter Jackson curries all of his goodwill in Hollywood into finally remaking his classic remake of the 1933 original kaiju film. That's right. Tune in next week as we look at History versus King Kong.
King Kong.
King, 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 King,
King, King Kong.